News Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon. Time for The Agenda. It's 12:15. Let the show begin. And today I'd like you to consider this. The law. You know how you say it. It is the law. It breaks the law. It's within the law. It rewrites the law. It interprets the law. It enforces the law. It leaves the law behind. It violates the spirit of the law. It is not covered by the law. It is beyond the reach of the law. It never heard of that law. Ignorance of the law, no excuse and no defense. Law and order exist for the purpose of establishing justice, and when they fail in this purpose, they become the dangerously structured dams that block the flow of social progress. You know who said that? I do. You figure it out. You can look it up, as Casey Stengel used to say. The end of law is not to abolish or restrain, but to preserve and enlarge freedom. And where there is no law, there is no freedom. You don't know who said that either? Okay. At his best, man is the noblest of all animals. Separated from law and justice, he is the worst. Laws and principles are not for the times when there is no temptation. If at my convenience I can break them, what good be their worth? In times of war, the law file falls silent. Laws are made to grind the poor. The rich men rule the law. If there were no bad people, there would be no good lawyers. When men are pure, laws are useless. When men are corrupt, laws are broken. And because of all these sayings and all the thousands of years of additional bumper sticker sayings, we have to lay down the law, and today we will. Good people, you do not need laws to tell them to act responsibly, while bad people will find a way around the law no matter what. And today, laws are subject because our special guest is Travis Brandt, candidate for the Chelan County Superior Court, where the laws that we just discussed and many other topics come to be heard before justice. Welcome to KPQ, Travis Brandt. Nice to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
It's good to talk to you. Of course, all those sayings, some by Robert F. Kennedy, some by Martin Luther King, some by Emily Dickinson, some by Hunter S. Thompson. Everybody talks about the law, and it's our freedom to do so. But to actually practice the law and then to rule on the law, well, that's another matter. It's a serious matter. And now, if you become the next justice of the Superior Court, it'll be your matter. That can be a weighty day sometimes.
That's correct. It's an awesome responsibility to sit as a judge and to make very important decisions that can have long-lasting implications and effects on families and individuals and businesses and all the different types of cases that come before the Superior Court.
Fortunately, being the judge, you have the law on your side, and that helps when you have to say yay or nay or yes or no.
Absolutely. A judge's role isn't to freelance or do what they want. I like to tell people, you know, I think a judge needs to kind of stay within his or her own lane. And what I mean by that is we don't have to make things up as we go along.
I hope not.
No, we can listen to the facts as they're presented, and then we have the law as it's written, the Constitution, state and federal, and the state statutes, and in some cases federal statutes, to look at and to apply that law to the facts as they're presented in court.
The law can be maddening to some people who don't necessarily understand the law. Let's talk about how you began to understand the law. How did you go to law school? Where?
I went to Gonzaga Law School. I began law school.
That must be a good law school. A lot of people that I've talked to during this election went to Gonzaga.
I'm biased, but I think it's the best law school.
All right. The best. You got a good start. You went to the best.
It's a very good law school. And if you ask, probably a large portion of our local legal community have gone there. There's a lot of lawyers that end up practicing law in Wenatchee that are Gonzaga Law School graduates. A lot of really good attorneys went to the law school there.
What did you learn besides the ins and outs of the law that you still carry with you from your Gonzaga days?
Well, when you're in law school, they kind of teach you basically how to interpret statutes and how to kind of think like an attorney would think when they're faced with a factual situation. And it kind of goes over time, over a three-year process, basically, you think of things before you go to law school, and then after law school, you might think of them a little bit differently because you've been trained to apply the factual situations that you're presented with to the law that exists that implicates that. And so, that's one of the things that I learned. I also learned how to write. and especially at Gonzaga Law School, but I'm certain most, if not all, law schools focus on this. It's really important as an attorney and a judge to be able to write clearly and effectively, because it's important that other people that are, you know, reading the point that you're trying to make understand, and that you're able to make your points clearly and effectively, and to cite legal authority for the legal proposition that you're trying to make.
They call them opinions, but really it's based on the law, not your opinion.
Correct. They're called opinions, but basically they're based upon other opinions, higher court opinions, and you cite them as authority, and you also cite statutes as authority as well in your opinions.
There's always the picture of the world-weary lawyer who is tired of his clients and tired of the crush and tired of everything, but he still has these ideals when it comes to the law. How do those things survive in people who labor in the law?
Well, what has driven me over the years and what I really enjoy about being an attorney is when I can make a difference in someone's life. Maybe someone's going through a divorce and they're fighting for custody of their children, or fighting to get even just visitation of their children. And, you know, they may have had some bad breaks along the way, but being able to help that individual get visitation rights or get custody of their children, not only am I helping my client, but I'm helping their children for generations, perhaps. And that's satisfying. Or representing individuals that are charged, maybe accused of committing crimes that maybe they've committed, maybe they haven't committed, but getting a good outcome from them and maybe giving them a second chance where, you know, if I wasn't there, they may not have received that. That's something that keeps me going as well.
That first example you gave is a maddening one, because you could reunite the father with his family and wonderful things could happen. You could reunite a violent father with his wife and children and terrible things could happen. It's not a flip of the coin. It's really far more detailed than that.
Yeah, well, there's obviously a lot of consequences to every decision that's made in court, and some of them are unintended and some of them are intended. And as a judge, you hope that you have all the relevant information and that the parties are able to present their sides of the case clearly and effectively, so that you can make the right choice for everyone that's involved in the case.
Now you're out of Gonzaga, you've become a successful lawyer, you're working in the legal profession. Where did you work?
Well, I've worked at several different places. The first job I ever had, I worked for a gentleman by the name of Ron Hammett, and he was a solo practitioner. I was his only associate.
Country lawyer?
Pretty much, yes, pretty much. And he had the Douglas County Superior Court contract, and that included adult felony representation and juvenile offender representation.
That's a busy
place. Yes, and I was assigned to represent juveniles, and which I think was a great spot for a lawyer brand new out of law school to start, because I was in court a lot. I got used to speaking in front of the judge. I got used to representing individual clients, trying to relate to them, listen to them, and go and advocate on their behalf in court. So that was a great opportunity for me to get into court very quickly as an attorney, because some lawyers, if you go to work for a bigger law firm, you may not see the inside of a courtroom for, you know,
maybe, ever.
Yeah, several years. But when you work for a small law firm such as I did, you go right into court and you hit the ground running, so to speak.
And if you have a case that's going to require court sometime, or perhaps a jury trial, you better have an experienced lawyer who, as Horace Rumpole, my favorite fictional lawyer, says, is able to stand on his hind legs and address the court.
I haven't heard that one, but yeah, that's
Well, Horace
true.
Rumpole's quite a character. He's not the best model for your career.
You definitely want an attorney who's experienced, who's been in the fire, so to speak, before. And fortunately, in Chelan Douglas County, we have a lot of great attorneys who have a lot of experience working in front of juries and judges, and it's not their first time in court, but for me, it's as you grow and you mature as an attorney. I've been at this, it'll be 20 years this coming up January. I think you develop a natural confidence in your abilities, and you can fall back on other cases that you've had, other hard trials that you've had. And when you're going into a difficult trial or situation, you can say, you know what, I've been through tougher cases, I've done harder things, I can do this. And your clients look at you, and that gives them confidence and courage to go forward, where maybe if you're a brand new attorney, or if you're someone that hasn't had a lot of experience in front of a jury or a judge, advocating, then you are less secure in what's going to happen next.
I'm not a lawyer, not even close, but I happen to know a lot of lawyers. And something that they tell me that I find hard to believe or hard to understand is that when you're arguing a case, sometimes the case gets very small, right down to just one or two points that have to be argued. And that's where the whole thing turns on. There's a lot of evidence and a lot of people that you wanted to call, but the case, as it gets closer to culmination, gets tiny.
That's true. In a lot of cases, you know, you may represent the plaintiff, you may represent the defendant, and 85% of the facts are not in dispute. There's only 15% or less, like your point. There might be only one or two facts that are really contested, and that how that those facts are decided are going to decide the outcome of the case. That frequently happens.
When do you think in your law career you began considering the idea of being a judge?
Probably, you know, when I first started, it wasn't even in my thought process for the first 5 or so years. It wasn't something that I necessarily aspired to. I was fortunate enough to be around some really very great judges like Judge Hoshkus in Douglas County. He's still the Douglas County Superior Court judge, Judge Bridges, and several other really good judges. So it's something that I looked up to, I respected, but I didn't really feel comfortable probably seeing myself in that position until I had probably at least 10 years of legal experience. And then at that point, I felt I'd been in court enough, especially Superior Court. I'd been in court enough. I'd tried enough cases. I had a broad enough legal experience of doing civil litigation, you know, family law, personal injury, criminal cases. I've been a prosecutor for the city of Wenatchee. Having all that experience, I felt, yeah, I can do that job. And then when you speak to your peers and people that you respect, such as judges, and they encourage you and they say, you know what, Travis, we believe that you're ready for this position, we can see you there, that kind of gave me the confidence to throw my name in the hat, so to speak.
If you're defending someone that you may think is guilty, you have your own ideals and conscience to wrestle with. But the same can be if you're prosecuting someone that may not be as guilty as you once thought they were. When you juggle these two sides, and you've argued both sides of as all lawyers have, you and maybe even enjoy arguing both sides of the same question, what do you do in that situation when your ideals are questioned?
Well, when I was a prosecutor, if I believed someone was innocent of the crime, it was my duty and my obligation to dismiss the case and to not go forward. The prosecutor has, I don't want to say necessarily a higher standard, but a different standard than a defense attorney. A prosecutor should not be going forward on cases that they don't think the person is factually guilty of what they're accused of. That's their obligation to dismiss the charge if that happens. In terms of being a defense attorney, there are occasions when I have clients that I think that I know are guilty of something. But the challenge is, and occasionally what occurs is the government will say, well, you're guilty of a whole lot of stuff and maybe more than what my client's actually guilty of. So at that point, it kind of becomes damage control and saying, yeah, you know, my client did make some mistakes here and they want to take responsibility for what they did wrong. But they did not do everything that the government is accusing them of doing. So at that point, you know, sometimes, a lot of times cases are resolved via plea negotiation and that sort of thing, where I would sit down with the prosecutor and say, explain to him or her exactly what I just explained to you. Like, look, you have my client accused of doing all of these things, but in reality, they're not guilty of all of these things. So why don't we reach something where they're still taking responsibility and they're held accountable for what they did wrong, but not everything that you initially charged them with.
So it's a juggling match, but one worthy to conduct, because different things can be result from that type of approach. I guess that's between you and the other lawyer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. And I think, again, over time, if you develop respect of your peers, and so the people that I work with on a daily basis know that I'm not going to tell them something that isn't true. And so I'm not going to, I've earned the respect over time, and vice versa in many instances where I can negotiate with them and they're saying, well, Travis Brand is a straight shooter. He's not going to lie to me. And so I trust what he's telling me in this instance.
Travis Brand is our candidate for Chelan County Superior Court. He's our guest in the studio today. One traffic note right now. There's an injury accident on the east side of the George Seller Bridge at this hour. Once again, injury accident on the east side of the George Seller Bridge. You've been warned on that one. Drive around it if you can. No looky-loos and no rubberneckers. I'm Michael Knight. This is The Agenda. We'll be back to talk with Travis Brand about what it's like to campaign to become a judge. That's a whole other world that he's entered now. We'll find out what he thinks about it right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560
Spectrum Mobile. Visit Spectrum.com today. Restrictions apply.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
This is The Agenda. It's 1233. I'm Michael Knight. My very special guest is Travis Brand. He's candidate for Chelan County Superior Court. Once again, repeating a traffic accident on the east side of the George Sella Bridge, an injury accident right now on the east side of the George Sella Bridge. Avoid that area if you can. We hope no one is seriously injured. Travis Brand, besides being a lawyer and now a candidate for the Chelan County Superior Court, you have to go out and campaign, which is something that many lawyers find easy to do and many sensible lawyers find impossible to do, to stand on someone's doorstep and knock.
Well, it's definitely different than the everyday task of being an attorney, campaigning. And it's a challenge for sure. The time commitment, because I didn't close up my practice when I decided to run for judge. So I still have to maintain my law practice, which is very busy. And then I'm a father of three. I have three children, married. So I have my family.
How old are your kids?
My son is 20. I have two daughters, 18 and 14.
That's a busy household. I don't care how many kids you have.
Yes, it's very busy. And my daughter's active in soccer and band. And my other daughter's active. And my son just got married, so we are a busy, busy family on top of everything else that's going on.
Well, I think you were wise not to let up on your practice. It's good to have a day job when you're running for office, isn't it?
it sure is. You know, it just lets you focus on things other than the campaign, which can be very stressful.
Well, for someone running for the judgeship of a superior court, you can't really talk about issues. You're not going to practice law differently now than anyone else has ever practiced law.
Right.
And you can't institute changes when you sit at the bench. What do people ask you, and what do you tell them about your approach and why you need their vote?
Well, I think the number one thing people want to know is, why do I think that I'm qualified to be a judge? And what I explain to them is what I've explained to you, that I've been an attorney for almost 20 years. I've spent basically my entire career practicing in Superior Court. And I think it's important that the person that you're voting for has experience working in the court where they want to be the judge of. And so for me, Superior Court's where I am. I'm there 2, 3, 4 days a week working there, and I've been doing that for almost 20 years. Now, when I was the city prosecutor for the city of Wenatchee, I didn't go to Superior Court as frequently, because that's the district court position. But overwhelmingly, for the most part, I've worked in Superior Court. And I've done a lot of family law cases, which is pretty much almost half of what is heard in Superior Court. And I've done criminal work as well, and also complex civil litigation. I've had jury trials, civil trials. And so that's the number one question people ask me, is why are you qualified? And then the second question they want to know is, what's your connection to this community? You know, where are you from?
Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Spokane. But my family.
I've heard of that. That's a town somewhere, right?
Yeah. My family moved here when I was very young. I don't ever remember living in Spokane as a baby. But I grew up in Wenatchee. I went to all of our local public schools. I graduated from Wenatchee High School in 1989. And then I went on to Central Washington University and then Gonzaga Law School. So, I'm very, committed to this community. I coach North Central Washington football, the little guys. It's a lot of fun. I've been doing that for probably almost 10 years now. My son went through it, and after my son aged out of it, basically, they asked me to stay, and I love being around the youth, and I love coaching football. So I've done it for the last 7 years, even though my son's been through with it.
When you graduated law school, you may have been recruited to go somewhere. You could have ended up in Denver or Schenectady, for that matter. What made you come home to Wenatchee?
Well, you're right. Right as the process was going on, where I was taking the bar exam, you know, I'd finished law school, I'm taking the bar exam, my wife came to me and said, you know, I'm pregnant, Travis. And it turned out my son, Carl. And at that point, I had my applications all over the place. But at that point, I always knew that I wanted to raise my family here where I grew up. And so at that point, I just kind of focused back in on Wenatchee and Chelan County, really, because that's where I knew I wanted to raise my kids. That's where my parents are from. That's where my grandparents are from. And so it was important to me to be able to share this community that I love with my kids. So that's why I decided to come back here.
And before your grandparents, did they, or they're the ones who homesteaded the trip to Wenatchee one fine day?
They came out here in the 40s. Actually, there's a story in my family where they're from Oklahoma, on my dad's side. And they first moved to Bremerton and from Oklahoma. And there was a story where my grandpa came home from work one day, and he's in all of his rain gear, and he's completely soaked. And he told my grandma, he said, "Jude, we have got to go somewhere with less rain."
Well, you couldn't find a place with much more rain. I think Kauai, there's a mountain on Kauai that has 700 inches a year, but that's about it.
Yeah, so then they took a drive, and they came to Wenatchee, and, you know, obviously this is where we ended up.
The land of less rain. Well, then he made a good choice. It sounds like it resonates well for the Brand family.
Yes, for sure. This is kind of where we all end up.
Now, from your time in court, you say that half of your cases were family law, which is probably pretty an eye-opening, strange number for a lot of people out there who don't know the law.
Well, what I was trying to indicate is half of the cases heard in Superior Court are family law.
That's a lot.
So almost half. Probably, I don't know what the exact percentages are. I was talking to Judge Allen a while back, who's presiding, the most senior Superior Court judge, and she said probably about 40% of the cases that she hears is family law. And so with my personal practice, that's not the percentage. I do less family law than that. But as a Superior Court judge, I will be prepared and be hearing almost half of my cases will be family law cases.
And the other half are criminal and what else?
Criminal, a big chunk of them are criminal. So maybe another 40% are criminal cases. And those are serious criminal matters, felony matters that are heard in Superior Court. And then roughly 20%, I'll call them miscellaneous type cases. And those can be almost anything like probate or personal injury cases or, you know, land use cases, all different types of areas of law.
As a judge sees the end of the case coming around, he's probably consulting his sentencing guidelines, which I understand as a intellectual idea, but I don't understand really what they mean. How does it tie your hands? How does it free your hands? What do you do with sentencing guidelines when it's time?
Well, in Superior Court, the way it works is basically the sentencing range is kind of set, the presumptive range. Now, a judge does have the ability to go either below or above the sentencing range, but depending on someone's criminal history, so, for example, if someone has two prior run-ins with the law, serious run-ins, felonies, and then they're pleading guilty to a felony, like, say, a felony assault, yeah. You look at the prior history, and then you look at the criminal charge that they're charged with, and then the legislature sets a range for that particular charge. For example, it could be like 20 to 30 months. And so, and that's the presumptive range. So normally someone that pleads guilty and they have a certain criminal history, the judge doesn't have to, but it's presumed that they'll go within that standard range that the legislature sets up. But there are circumstances where we call them mitigating circumstances, which maybe lessen, gives the judge justification for going below what the standard range should be. And then we have aggravating factors as well, which would give the judge authority to go above what the standard range should be.
We hear sometimes the judges are impressed by someone's remorse, or they're pleading guilty, they address the court, they say something that may affect the judge. I don't know if he's affected emotionally, but he's affected enough in terms of what he's heard that he alters his idea about the sentencing. Have you ever experienced that, and do you think it's genuine?
Well, every person that's convicted of a crime has a right of contrition and basically a right to speak. And sometimes people say nothing, and sometimes people say a lot. And as a judge, what I've told my clients that are in that situation is, look, this judge probably can't read your mind, so you need to, if you are remorseful and you want to take responsibility for your actions, you need to tell the judge that, because it might make a difference to her or him. And so if I am a judge, it's important to me that whoever, if someone wants to come into court and say, look, I made a mistake, I want to take responsibility for my actions, I'm not blaming the victim, I'm not blaming anyone, I'm taking responsibility for what I did wrong, that may not be a basis, and probably isn't a basis, to go below the standard range, but it might be a basis to give maybe a little bit lesser sentence than you would if someone said, you know what, I don't care, I'm not taking responsibility for what I did wrong.
The court is a public place. People can come in and watch the proceedings as because they are done, I guess, in our name. The name of the, we're conducting these law proceedings in the name of the people. In fact, the prosecuting attorney represents the people, right?
Yes.
But do the people come and watch what you do? It's an important element of our society, and I think I know the answer to this.
It's very infrequent that we have just people that aren't attached to the matters at hand come in and just watch court just out of curiosity or just wanting to know what goes on. Frequently we'll have classes of you know, different ages. They'll come in and they'll watch court to observe it, to learn more about our system. And then occasionally, even after the matter that's being litigated is resolved for the day, the judge will say, well, I noticed that we have a group of fifth graders here, or, you know, ninth graders here. Do you have any questions for me or any of the attorneys about what you saw today? And then we'll, you know, spend some time talking to them about it. But it's very rare that we have just someone in court for no reason, you know, other than that, you know, they're interested in what's going on.
Probably a fifth grader would say, what do you guys say up there when you're whispering? How come we can't hear that?
Yes, that happens a lot.
I'm sure those conversations are fascinating, and that's why we can't hear them, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's just the judge will ask the attorneys to approach because maybe there's some confidential matters that they don't want to put on the record necessarily. And as long as both attorneys are there for, you know, both sides of the argument, then there's nothing wrong with that necessarily.
Is justice equally dispensed when it's a jury trial as opposed to a judge trial, do you think?
In most cases, I would say definitely yes. I think a right to a jury is really sacred in our system. It's very, very important that in our Constitution, both state and federal, that we are given the right to a jury of our peers, of people that aren't interested in the outcome of the case. It's kind of a buffer, if you will, between say the government and someone that's accused of a crime, or maybe someone that's injured in an accident, to go and seek justice from a jury of their peers. That's something that's sacred in our system and something that I respect. But I think a judge should have the ability to listen fairly and impartially to the case and render a fair decision based upon the law as well.
Unlikely that the judge will be swept away by a closing argument, but is it possible for a jury to be swept away by something that exceeds the boundaries of logic?
For the most part, juries, in my experience in 20 years of litigating cases and trying cases in front of juries, sometimes immediately after the decision's rendered, I may not agree with it as a lawyer, especially if it's on the other side, where, you know, you are, because you put your heart and soul into your case and you want to win and you try and you argue, and then the jury says, no, we don't agree with you. So that's sometimes that's hard to hear as an attorney. But upon reflection, when you think about the outcome, maybe in days and weeks pass, and you think back on it, you think, you know what, you know, even though I didn't agree with the decision they made, I can understand how they got to that decision. So I have a lot of respect for our system. It's not perfect, but I think it's the best system in the world.
We always describe it that way. It's not perfect. It's the best system. It's also not imperfect. So that there's something there to be thinking about.
Yeah.
It's not the worst that we came up with. It's a pretty flexible system, given all the different ways it's been twisted over the years.
Right. That's true.
Travis Brand is a candidate for the Chelan County Superior Court. We'll come back. He'll ask you for your vote right after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560.
Women in ag.wsu.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
12:52, we're just about out of time. Our guest is Travis Brand. He's candidate for the Chelan County Superior Court. After all the time you've spent in the courtroom and all the time in this community, probably when you run for office, you learn something. What have you learned about the people?
Well, I learned that they care a lot about this community. They care a lot about people that are going to be in positions of authority and people that are going to be making decisions that have long-lasting effects on this community and the people that live here.
Now it's that time when everyone who sits in this chair is asked to call upon the voters to vote for them. Go ahead.
Well, I believe strongly that everyone that enters court deserves a full and fair opportunity to be heard. They also deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. And if I'm elected to Chelan County Superior Court, position number two, I will treat everyone that enters the courtroom with respect and dignity, and I'll follow the law, and I'll work extremely hard on behalf of the people of Chelan County.
That's the voice of Travis Brand, candidate for Chelan County Superior Court. Nice to have you here again. Good luck.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to